Blog Talk Radio.
To another edition of Juwanza for Life. Oh my God, you ready to go all the way? I'm ready to go all the way, and just by virtue of the fact that you've tuned in, it lets me know that you are too. We've got a very exciting exciting show lined up for you today, and your spirit brought you here. Okay, you're not here by accident. Your spirit brought you here because either you personally are going to benefit from this information or you know somebody that can. And I encourage you to share the information that you received today. If it's not for you, it's for somebody you know. Trust me. Let me tell you about my guest. Oh, my God, you're in for a treat. My guest today is Dr. Ruby Lathan. She's a holistic health and wellness expert and advocate for plant-based nutrition. Dr. Lathan inspires with a powerful story of recovering from thyroid cancer through alternative treatment focused on a whole foods plant-based diet. Dr. Lathan, who holds a PhD in industrial and systems engineering and a BS in computer science, began teaching others about the benefit and power of plant-based nutrition. She motivates others to take charge of their health and provides tools for living healthy, disease-free, and above our daily routines to experience the peace and joy of life's journey. Dr. Lathan served as nutrition policy manager and lobbyist at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, where she led a national initiative to improve child nutrition and prevent chronic disease through emphasis on plant-based options in the National School Lunch Program. Dr. Lathan is a dynamic speaker, as you'll find out, and educator, hosting a number of seminars, workshops, and healthful vegan cooking demonstrations. Dr. Lathan is a health and wellness contributing writer for African American Lifestyle magazine and host of an alternative health webcast called Health 365 and Whole Foods vegan cooking show called The Veggie Chest. Without further ado, I want to stand and I want to bow to Queen Dr. Ruby Lathan. Thank you so much for being my special guest again on Juwanza for Life.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. I'm always excited to be on with you because it's such a great show, sharing such good information with everyone. So thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. It's my pleasure and our treat. When I talk about holistic health with people, your name always comes up out of my mouth. You know, I'm talking to people, I'm like, have you ever heard of Dr. Ruby Lathan? You need to tune into the show. If you haven't, you need to tune into the show because this information is life-saving. And just as a person who has interviewed a lot of people, I mean, I've interviewed celebrities, I've interviewed a lot of people, but nobody gets my juices flowing like when I talk to people who are actually saving lives, changing lives, and by doing so, making the world a better place, you know. And so for that, I just bow to you and I say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because, again, you're saving lives. And when you're saving lives, you're keeping families even together. Because if you actually help to save a life by sharing information with people that can extend their life, that's not only good for that person, families benefit from it as well. So thank you so much. So tonight, everybody, we're going to be talking about, this is Colon Cancer Awareness Month. So it's actually part two of colon cancer, the shows that we're doing on Colon Cancer Awareness Month. And Dr. Lathan is going to be holding down the fort today. And although the show is titled The End of Colon Cancer, it's not just about colon cancer, because regardless of whatever the situation is, whatever condition you may find yourself in, whether it's high blood pressure, low blood pressure, arthritis, tuberculosis, any other form of cancer, thyroid cancer, liver cancer, breast cancer, whatever it is, you can benefit from this show. Because as Dr. Lathan said, when you heal the body, you heal the body. Okay, so again, we're going to jump right into exactly. So, Dr. Lathan, for those who are tuning in for the first time again, I want to welcome you. You could be doing other things. So, but we're talking about colon cancer as a point of departure. What, when people talk about colon cancer, people talk about the body, and people oftentimes, they, because your organs are inside of the body, so unless you're looking at an X-ray machine or something, you can't really see what's inside your body. You know you have a heart, you can feel it beating, but you've never seen it. So, and people, when they think of the colon, I don't want to assume that everybody knows what the colon is or its function. Could you share with our listeners what the function, first of all, is of the colon, and then we can get into why and how people develop colon cancer?
Sure. You know, the colon is a critical part of our digestive process. It's extremely important. And one of the reasons it's so important is because, well, there's a lot of reasons. It helps us digest our food and get nutrients out of it and get the waste products out of our body. So it's a very important function because we need to be able to digest our food and absorb the nutrients and then get rid of the waste. So that's critical to life. Without doing those things, we don't live. If we can't digest food, absorb nutrients, and get rid of waste, we will die. So it's critical. It's extremely critical. Also, what's important to note about the colon is that they say our natural physicians, doctors, and natural community understand that most disease starts in the colon, in our digestive tract. And most, I'm meaning upwards from 75% to 80% of disease actually starts in the colon from either poor digestion, lack of digestion, not being able to eliminate the waste product that's in our system, things getting causing inflammation in our system. So given that 75-80% of disease actually starts in the colon, it's really important to have a healthy colon, things moving well, and stay on top of that, because we want to, if we can keep a healthy digestive tract, we're going to eliminate, you know, most disease right there. So it's very, very important. So by the time cancer shows up, you know, things have been going wrong for a very long time when by the time cancer shows up in the colon. And so we can do a lot to alleviate that. So, you know, it's part of the entire digestive process. The colon plays an important role in that.
Okay. Well, you know what? Before we go any further, I would be remiss in not allowing you to please share your testimony, actually what brought you to the holistic health field. Okay, I mentioned to people when I was telling them to tune in that you had an awesome testimony. For those who have never heard it, you're going to be blown away when you do hear it. And for those of you who may, with any dis-ease, be your testimony as well. Would you please share what brought you to the holistic health path?
Sure. What you know, it's always a process. For a lot of people, we get here in different ways. And one, mine was started in about 2007 when I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. You know, I was in complete shock about that diagnosis because I thought I was pretty healthy and was eating pretty healthy, so I thought. And I decided, you know, just from what I was told, you know, my only option that was given to me was to have surgery and remove my thyroid. I didn't like that course of action. I didn't like the end result of that because that meant I'd be on medication for the rest of my life, completely dependent upon a medication. I didn't have a lot of information about holistic health at the time, but I did know that all medication has a side effect, pharmaceutical medications, and I was like, you know, even though they were telling me, oh, there are no side effects, there's nothing, it's a small little pill, you'll be fine, it's an easy surgery, it's not a big deal, millions of people have this done, I didn't want to be a cog in that wheel of just being part of the process of the industry of cancer and cancer treatment, where now I'm part of the money-making machine where somebody's making money off of me and my illness for the rest of my life. And so I said, you know, I'm going to look for alternative approaches. And I asked the doctor, I said, are there, you know, alternatives other than the surgery? And he said, no. No, there aren't. And he said, and I've never seen anybody healed of it naturally. So I said, okie dokie, you know, thank you for that information. And he's already talking about scheduling my surgery a few months out. He's like, yeah, if you want to go that route, and try, you can try whatever you want to try, and we'll just schedule your surgery in 3 months. But as if that was, if what I was going to try was going to have zero impact. And so I said, okay, and just, you know, hung up the phone, and immediately started researching, because, you know, sometimes something in your spirit just says, no, this isn't the way this is going to go. And that's what I had. Something in my spirit said, no, we're not doing this. we are going to find another way, another approach. We're going to look into natural health and healing. Because fortunately, I had heard about people healed from cancer naturally. I had met someone who was a much older lady who had been diagnosed with breast cancer 20 years before and had healed herself naturally. And so those thoughts came to mind. I'm like, if they can do it, there's no reason I can't. So I just need to figure out what I need to do to make that happen. And so I started researching everything I could. I started online just researching everything about cancer. You know, because we hear a lot about cancer, but until you get it, you really never dive into it to figure out how does cancer actually form? What causes actual cancer specifically? What could have made this happen? And so I started there trying to figure out how I got cancer so that I could stop doing whatever it was that caused the problem in the first place. You know, because we have to think logically and not always, I didn't start with what is the cure. I started with what, how did I get here? And so so I said, you know, well, let me figure out what I've been doing or putting in my body or doing environmentally that I've been taking in that could have caused this so I can stop it. And then the second part is now that I have it and I can figure out what to stop, what do I need to start doing to get rid of it? So it was a very logical approach that I took to it. And so I started reading about everything that could possibly cause thyroid cancer from excess radiation exposure to just, you know, genetics, to excess processed foods and soy, you know, heavily processed soy products, all of that. So I started reading about that, started making some small changes based on that, and then I started reading about trying to find, you know, how can I get rid of this. And through the research, I started finding more and more about plant-based diets and how a completely plant-based diet has healed so many people of not only cancer, but of carved arteries, diabetes, kidney failure, all of these diseases that we think are inevitable based on age or just because our parents had it, that is completely, most of it is linked to our diet and lifestyle. And so I started, you know, so I decided, you know, I'm going to switch my diet. I'm going to get rid of all the processed stuff that I've been eating. I'm going to get rid of all the dairy and meat products that I've been eating and go to a completely plant-based diet, a whole foods diet, and let it work like it. I had read hundreds of testimonials by now of people who had been healed of this. And then I also read scientific journal articles and literature that also supported how plant-based foods heal the body. When you take away this toxic animal protein and give your body what it needs, food that it's that we're made to eat, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, herbs, all of those things, and start eating that in abundance, and then doing things like juicing and smoothies, and then supplements also that help the body heal. I did that, and a year later, the cancer was gone, and a few months after that, the tumor shrunk altogether, and I was free of cancer, and without a single pill from the pharmaceutical industry, without radiation, without chemo, without surgery, all of I letting my body heal itself by putting different things in my body, leaving out the junk and putting in nourishment, and then reducing stress, meditating, and prayer. And putting all those things together, I was able to heal myself. And that's how I got into this field, because I said, you know, what would I have done if I hadn't had the gumption to go and research this myself and just listen to the doctor in the white coat and did what he told me to do? I'm angry right now that my thyroid was gone and I'd be on this medication that does have side effects, one which has been shown to be breast cancer of this synthroid to raise your chances of breast cancer. So that's one of the side effects no one told me about when they were trying to sell me this pill. And so I would be very angry if I had done that course of action without having researched it for myself. And so so I said, you know, I need to let other people know. People need to know you can heal your body by itself, that the body, just the same way that it heals a cut on your finger, it can heal cancer the same way. Mm-hmm. Your body knows what to do if you give it what it needs. Now, if we're, you know, bogging it down with, you know, Krispy Kreme and McDonald's and Applebee's and all the restaurants they are showing us on television, you know, 2-for-1 and all this garbage, if you're feeding yourself that, it makes the body slow down the healing process. It hampers the body's ability to fight something as big and aggressive as cancer. So the body can do it, but you have to give it what it needs. And that's why when we start doing holistic things, we put you on a very strict regimen of you know, plant foods, of juicing, of fasting, and things like that, because you need to detox first, and then you need to give your body mega doses of vitamins, nutrients, and minerals so that it can actually heal. And so that's how I got into this, because I want to share this information with the world and quit letting industries basically tear our families apart by killing us through the food we're eating and killing us through these treatments that don't work. And we're losing our parents, our grandparents, our uncles, aunts way too soon for diseases that are 100% mostly avoidable and reversible. So,
you know, well, Doctor, that's powerful. That is a powerful, powerful, powerful testimony, and I'm sure that somebody out there listening is feeling like, wow, that could be me, or that could be, you know, my uncle could have that testimony, or my mother could have that testimony, or somebody that I know can have that exact testimony. Well, I would like to touch on this, because I know that it had to be in the beginning, and you asked your doctor whether or not that you had planned on adopting a plant-based diet and seeing how that worked for you. When this person, who is supposed to be an expert in the field of medicine, you know, they're a doctor, they've passed all of the requirements to receive their doctorate degree, told you that really, you could do it if you want to, but, you know, good luck, you know what I mean? But fat chance if it's going to work. That had to, at that point, it had to be a bit discouraging, if not, it didn't dissuade you, obviously, but just from the standpoint of, here's this person who's not giving me any optimism, no chance at all, you know? And I think for a lot of people, they might be faced with that, if not from their doctors, from other family members, if they even suggested that they would like to try a plant-based diet. And I like to use the word live it, because, you know, the standard American diet, you're going to do just that, you're going to die. But the response that you got, and like so many people get, is negative, because maybe it's just because they just don't run in those circles, and that has to be the only reason, because if you ran in the circles like the circles that you run in now, you would have gotten nothing but encouragement. But to hear that from somebody that is supposed to know can be discouraging to a lot of people.
It is. It's not only discouraging, it's scary to a lot of people. I you know, I think I was born with a little bit of a defiant spirit, from when I can remember. And so that didn't discourage me. It was almost a challenge to me, because I just had, you know, just a higher faith, not, you know, just in God for starters, that, you know, no one is going to dictate how this is going to go for me. That's number one. And so I really relied on faith in God that I'm going to be okay regardless. You know, this is going to work out positively. I never feared death. You know, I always knew that whatever route I was going to take, I was going to be okay. And that was just from just having faith. The second part is just knowing that just because someone is a doctor or whatever their profession is, you never just take their word for it. They can be wrong. And you need to look at your doctor like that they are fallible. They make mistakes every day. And you're sometimes just the next checklist that they're going through and not really giving you the attention that you need. And I'm not disparaging doctors. I mean, we all do this in our different professions. But when it comes to the way we're treating these, what we call chronic diseases or terminal illnesses, I mean, the fact that they are termed that way already lets you know that they're not expecting, number one, for you to get well or for you to really live, because they're calling it a terminal illness and a chronic disease. Hmm. Chronic means it's continuous. It does not end. That's what chronic means. So when you're calling, you know, diabetes and kidney things chronic, and you're calling cancer fatal or terminal, that's the mindset that they're treating you with, number one. And two, they haven't studied what I've studied. They haven't studied nutrition. They haven't studied how to therapeutically feed the body. They haven't studied juicing. They haven't studied these things. What they've studied is medication and surgery. They're very good at that. And sometimes we need a little of those things. Sometimes we have to integrate medications and surgeries to heal because we are, our disease is far too far gone to start from scratch with natural remedies. But you can always integrate the natural remedies to so that you can survive the aftermath and so that you can live longer than the five-year window that they consider a successful cancer patient. Not that you live and have no more cancer. They say if you live 5 years after your cancer treatment, it's been successful. I don't really consider that successful. That's how they're measuring success. So if they were really measuring true, the numbers would be even lower than they are. So when you're looking at, you know, even integrating natural methods, whether you decide to do a chemo, radiation, surgery, whatever, your chances of living past those 5 years are extremely higher and exponentially greater than someone who just goes back to their normal lifestyle and then would likely have a recurrence. And that's why they call it remission versus a cure. I never said, oh, my cancer's in remission, because to me that says it's coming back. Remission means, you know, we're taking a reprieve. No, I said, I'm cured. You can call it what you want. You can call it remission. I'm calling it a cure because that means it's gone for good. That's what that means.
Right.
And so when we even just look at the mindset and the terminology of this industry, you can understand why people treat it the way they do, because you're setting your expectation. You're in remission, which means your cancer's coming back. And, you know, they're probably right, because if you didn't do anything to change what got you there, it probably will come back. But we really have to integrate these things. And then with the doctors, I almost took it as a challenge when he said, I've never seen anyone healed from it. I was almost scoffing at the idea of alternatives. And I was thought to myself at that moment, I guess I'll be the first, you know. That was my thought, and that was my mission to make that happen. And, you know, he was very discouraging as I was going through the process. I think he was a little upset that I was not following his plan of doing the surgery when he wanted me to do the surgery. And so he was very discouraging when I would go in to get checked up. And so, you know what, I said, I get to choose my doctor. You know what, I'm going to get a new doctor who is going to go with me on this journey, because I'm not paying my money to come in here and be discouraged by you. So, and we have to understand our doctors work for us. Somehow when we get in that office, it's like they're doing us a favor. We feel like that. So I'm like, you know, sometimes you need to fire your doctor and get a new one, a better one, or someone who's at least going to follow you on the path that you're doing. And so I didn't get rid of that doctor because of the negativity that I was feeling. I was like, it's hard enough to do this journey on your own like this without the discouragement of someone like that. So I encourage people to, you know, shop around so you can get some champion on your side to work with you. Even if you work with your traditional doctor, find a naturopathic doctor, find a holistic health coach who can actually guide you through this process and be a cheerleader, because you will get discouragement on every front. You will get discouragement from the regular. I didn't meet a doctor, an MD, who encouraged me to do what I was doing. Not a single one. So I did get support from obviously the naturopathic doctors and people in that frame who said it's possible. I've seen it happen. Here's my suggestion. So I took all that information and put it together for a plan. So.
Wow, that is so amazing, because, again, I applaud you just pressing on, you know, and keeping your faith in God, because obviously had you had your faith in man and listened to the doctor, we wouldn't be having this conversation today, because you wouldn't have become a holistic healer. You'd still be doing something else. And, you know, a lot of the people that are listening today wouldn't be hearing this powerful, powerful testimony. To all of the listeners online, by the way, I want to let you know that if you press 1, if you have a question for Dr. Lathan or just like to make a comment, all you have to do is press 1 and I'll bring you on board. Dr. Lathan, let me ask you this. What is we're talking about, this is Colon Cancer Awareness Month, and the topic of the show is the end of colon cancer. And you just heard Dr. Lathan's powerful testimony, now you know why you're listening to her, okay? So, Doctor, what is a polyp? Anytime you hear the word colon cancer, you know, issues with the colon, the word polyp is inevitably going to arise. So for the listeners who might not know, what is a polyp?
It's something that happens inside the colon, usually in the lining of the colon. And a lot of them are benign, and it's kind of a large growth. You think of it as a pimple in the colon. It starts out very small, and then, you know, if we don't do something different, it starts to get bigger and bigger and bigger until it starts causing some actual symptoms. So you can have polyps for a very long time and not know that you have it. But most colon cancer starts out as a polyp, and you can have polyps and not have colon cancer. And so a lot of people will go and get tested and find out they have a polyp and just have it removed, and then go on with natural life and not do anything different. And the problem with that is that polyp was a warning sign. So if you've had a polyp and you go in and you have your blood test done and your colonoscopy, usually where they find these little kind of what they seem like growths, in your colon, and they find it before it's turned into cancer, or the type of there are certain polyps that you generally don't turn into cancer, but they find it, and then they usually just remove it, and then people think they're fine. But that was like a warning flag saying, hey, stop, do something different. I gave you a reprieve. Your body's saying, we handled this abnormality without it turning into cancer, but next time, to keep going, we might not have the energy, the strength, what we need to fight that. So polyps are very serious. It's definitely, to me, a warning sign that you got to start doing something different immediately. But they're both, you can find benign polyps and cancerous polyps like tumors in the colon.
And the way they discover these polyps is that through the procedure of the colonoscopy, where this is very invasive procedure where they actually take an instrument and go inside and, you know, I guess for lack of a better term, snip the or, you know, clip the off. And what would be your thoughts on the colonoscopy? I was actually reading where the instrument is very difficult to sterilize. I don't know if it's because of the makeup of the instrument or what whatever solution they're using to try to clean it, but it's supposedly not only invasive, but just to, it's not really sterile.
You know, I hadn't really heard that. I've had a colonoscopy myself. I mean, it's not the most comfortable thing in the world, but, you know, I haven't heard about the sterility. I can't believe they haven't found ways to disinfect by now. A lot of things are even, you know, disposable. So I wouldn't be that concerned about that part of it. It's just that, just from what I've read, I haven't read that to be a real issue. You know, there are other ways to diagnose it as well, through blood tests and things like that. So I wouldn't not do a colonoscopy because of that, because your body is really good at handling germs, even if, God forbid, that it wasn't the best cleanliness. I really think it is. Most hospitals have that part of it down by now. So I would encourage it to happen, especially if you have something that has tipped off the fact that you might have it. Because by the time you get symptoms from colon cancer, it's pretty far advanced, because a lot of times you can have the polyps or cancer of colon and not know, you know, that you have it until you start getting some of the symptoms that are kind of, you know, down the road. And some of those symptoms would be things like a change in the way that you go to the bathroom, in terms of, let's say you start having more constipation or diarrhea when you haven't had that. One of the things is, especially if you have a growth, if you have if your stool comes out very thin, that can be, you know, and that happens repeatedly where it doesn't go away. blood, obviously, in the stool is one of those things that is a definite symptom of that. So the bleeding, cramping in the stomach area a lot, pretty abnormally, is a symptom. And then weight loss without trying is one of those symptoms. And then there's some other symptoms like, fatigue or tiredness or, just bloating, which can be so many other things that it would be hard to pinpoint it based on that. So, I mean, but when you put all those together, you definitely want to look at that, especially a change in the way that you're, eliminating your waste and, bleeding or pain and things like that. Especially another one as far, it's advanced, is that if you feel like you have to eliminate but you don't and that feeling doesn't really go away, that's also a sign and symptom of cancer, of colon cancer, probably a later stage at that point. So we really don't want to get to the late stage. We want to do our tests and things early on, so that we're not getting so far down the road. And then I also believe in, preventative measures that we can talk about.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, because, again, just back to the colonoscopy for a moment. What would be some of the, if for somebody who says, even if it's not for the, the sterility part of it, they say, okay, I'm cool with that, but, it's just invasive. Is there another way that they can determine whether or not you have a less invasive way that they can actually determine whether or not they have polyps?
For the polyps, I'm not sure. I know they can do a number of blood tests to test for the cancer. I'm not sure that there are other ways to really test for polyps. And, we, really have to get into, what the recommended checkups are for that. But, yeah, for finding polyps, it's going to be difficult, I think, without the colonoscopy. Yeah, but, I would check with the doctor on that to just, it's a question to ask.
Well, if they did, let's say, for example, did the blood test and the blood test showed that there was no cancer, would that be enough for somebody to say, okay, well, they did the blood test, they ran the blood test said no, so I'm good? I mean, is that reliable? Would you say that that's a reliable enough test for, someone who was considering? Because actually I was, there was a question that actually arose, and I said that I would bring it up. There was somebody who was basically, I guess, scheduled to have a colonoscopy, and he thought it was kind of invasive, and he was like, I'm looking for another option because, I guess I don't want to go that route. Would the blood test be enough to determine if there was no cancer? Could that be enough assurance? If this person's a holistic individual, so, if the blood test said no and they were living a holistic life, actually he's a vegan, so if that were the case, could that be enough to say, and there were no other symptoms like the ones that you mentioned, would that be safe?
I think what they do sometimes before even the colonoscopy is they do stool samples, because mm-hmm. even the polyps tend to bleed. And so they can find not just blood but other things in the stool that can be a marker too. So you could definitely do some stool tests, which I think is gross, but I'd probably just have the colonoscopy, but you can, and they give you a little kit for that. So that's a less invasive way to do it. So that's actually one that's done pretty commonly too, other than the colonoscopies, and there are different levels of colonoscopies too. Sometimes some just look at the very lower end of the colon, some, have to go further up if you're experiencing different symptoms. But you can do stool tests, which definitely would be less invasive. You just have to collect a sample, and they have a kit for that. It's pretty, makes it not so disgusting to do, but so you can do it. So that's definitely an option.
Okay. Well, what role does food play in this whole conversation, the role of diet, what you're actually putting into your body? Because let's say, for example, you have somebody that, you know, they have regular bowel movements and, you know, but they eat meat. You know, they're not particularly clogged up, and I use particularly in quotes, clogged up. But you know, they don't have symptoms or whatever, and they think, okay, I'm good. So what role does, say, eating meat play in it, or dairy? What role does this, and why are these contributing factors to colon cancer?
Because one of the problems or things that cause colon cancer is like inflammation in the lining of the intestine. So that's really where the polyps start to grow. And when the lining of the intestine gets disrupted, irritated, inflamed, things start to having these growths in between the lining and causing these problems. Inflammation causes that. So eating foods like dairy and meat products causes inflammation in our colon. So that is why you increase your chances of colon cancer, because you're eating those foods. Also, if you're eating a lot of those foods have no fiber, so they're going to move out of the system a lot slower. The longer it takes to eliminate food from the time you ingest it to the time you eliminate it, the longer it is, the worse it is for you. You really want to be that in about 24 hours from the time you eat something to the time it eliminates. It should be really less than 24 hours. They say 36 at the longest end. It should not take more than that. And when your system is really moving, it can be as quick as 8 hours when you're eating a really clean, clean diet. So because it slows down the digestive process, because it has no fiber, because it causes inflammation, eating more meat and dairy products raises your likelihood of colon cancer. And that's why you should eliminate those foods, because you can get the same protein nutrients from other foods without the side effects of inflammation, antibiotics, hormones, all those things that, you know, contribute to cancer through plant-based products, through beans and nuts and seeds and things like that, to give it a much, you know, because all those things have fiber. Plant foods have fiber. So they come in a form that our body likes. We don't have to take Metamucil if we're having a green smoothie every day. You don't need that. You know, you don't need extra fake fiber products. You don't have to go buy all these fiber bars and things that they promote on television if you eat real food. If you eat salads, if you eat broccoli, if you eat Brussels sprouts and cabbage and greens every day, several times a day, you don't need the artificial fiber. And so because the plant foods have fiber, they're the perfect food for the body because they have the proteins, the nutrients, the antioxidants, and the fiber. Once again, meat has no antioxidants. Dairy has no antioxidants. It has no fiber. It doesn't have things that clear out free radicals from the body, which cause cancer. Basically, meat and dairy introduce free radicals, whereas plant foods are going to fight free radicals and take them out of the system. So it's like, do you want to introduce free radicals or do you want to eliminate free radicals? And so that's where you want to start making your choice. When you understand how food works in the body, it makes it a little easier to choose wiser because you know, okay, I'm going to have let's say if I go and have a hamburger, I'm eating, you know, white bread, meat, and cheese, a cheeseburger. And then let's even get fancy with it and put some bacon on it. You're eating all of that, and then maybe a piece of lettuce and a tomato, maybe. That means 98% of that is an inflammatory food product that is going to introduce things that cause cancer, that entire burger. There's nothing good about it except the, you know, 1% of tomato and lettuce that is not enough to combat what you just ate. So yeah, it's meat increases your chance of colon cancer. Now, there are people who eat meat who aren't eating burgers, who aren't, eating fast food and junk and, maybe not having it at every meal and every day, and that's better, but you're still introducing it. So, for those people, I'm saying go do more meatless meals, understand what you're doing to your body and start finding really good, healthy-tasting substitutes because they're out there, which is why, I do what I do and teach people how to do that, how to cook food that tastes good because, I understand when I say things like, you should eat beans, nuts, and seeds. That doesn't really sound as appetizing as a burger, right? But if I tell you that you can you take those same beans, nuts, seeds, and whole grains and make it into a vegetable lasagna, you can make it into creamy collard greens, you can make it into spicy, chili, you can make yummy kale chips, you can make all these things in a way that tastes good, then it's not such a bad proposal. When you understand that you can make this food taste very good and that you won't be deprived, and yes, you can have a burger, but maybe the burger, instead of being made out of a dead cow, will be made out of mushrooms and quinoa and whole grains and seasonings that taste really good.
Well, if we could, because you talk about, you do a show called The Veggie Chef, okay, where you actually teach people how to prepare food, because like you mentioned, a lot of times people, when they think of vegetarianism, they think of, salad, and that's it, just salad all day long, salad, some carrots, all day long. And they're like, nah, what was the word they used to call it? Bird food, So could you talk about your show, The Veggie Chest, and, just the other programs that you do and put on and lectures that you do and anything that you might have coming up that people who are interested can actually tune into your show, find out where you're going to be. I know they want to come out and hear you after hearing this show. So if you could, could you share about the Veggie Chest and the other things you might have coming up?
Sure. Veggie Chest, find it on YouTube. You can go to my website, rubylathan.com, or you go to YouTube and just put in the Veggie Chest. And you'll be able to find it there. And basically the show is about how to make healthy food taste good. That is the whole point of the show, how to take nourishing things that heal the body and then make them taste wonderful so that you are not missing a thing, but you're having food that is nourishing and pleasant to eat and look at the same time. So that's the goal of the show. We focus a lot on raw foods because raw foods are even better for the body than cooked foods. But we have also yummy cooked recipes as well, and they're all plant-based, all tested to make sure they're good and yummy for people. I do have something coming up called the Reengineer Your Life Holistic Health Summit on March 28th. That is next Saturday, actually, so just about, less than 10 days away, in Baltimore. At Morgan State University, at the University Center there. And people can go to roadmaptoholistichealth.com to find out more about that. Or there's a link on my website, too. So if you go to rubylathan.com, that's rubylathon.com, or roadmaptoholistichealth.com, you can find information about the conference. We'll call it the Holistic Health Summit because we're covering a full range of how to re-engineer your life, how to change your life to one that keeps you well, keeps you young, keeps you from developing these diseases. And if you have one of these so-called chronic diseases, how you can reverse it. We have a number of nutritionists, naturopathics, physicians, myself, raw foodists, raw food coaches and chefs who are going to actually be doing food demonstrations or have a health fair, so you'll be able to do some testing and lots of health products that you can take a look at. And that part of the event is free. And so it's an all-day event. It's like 8:30 to 5. And by the time you leave there, you will be so well-versed in what to do to keep yourself well. I'm really excited about it because it's really what we're talking about here, how to transform your thinking and your life to get away from disease and to knowing that you can live disease-free. So I'm excited about that. That's going to be an incredible day, and you can go to the website for testimonials on that. And I have events coming up all the time that you can just check my website. You can follow me on Twitter or Facebook, and so you can keep up to date, or go to my website and sign up for my newsletter, because I always send out information about upcoming events too, so that you can stay informed and connect with other people who are like-minded, because we tend to do what our friends do. So if all your friends are unhealthy and dying of diseases, it's time to get some new friends so that you can balance that out, so that you're not one of that number, that you're on the other end of helping them heal and not just commiserating with, you know, bad health.
Everybody, I hope you are enjoying this as much as I am. If you got about 10 minutes to go, so if you have a question for Dr. Lathan, now's the time to ask it. Please press 1 and I can bring you on board. I was speaking with someone prior to the show, and they mentioned to me that they had high blood pressure, and they wanted me to ask you about that as well. How could a plant-based diet improve high blood pressure? They are currently taking high blood pressure medicine.
Well, there's a lot of things. I mean, because usually there's a cascading effect with things like high blood pressure. You know, if you usually start out with high blood pressure, the next thing is, you know, diabetes and other things. So it's one of those warning flags to say, don't just take a medication and think you're going to be okay. It's the warning flag to say, you need to reverse this before it turns into something else. One way is to do juicing. Celery juice, doing like 6 to 8 ounces of celery juice every day has been known to reduce blood pressure. And the mistake a lot of people make when they have high blood pressure is they stop eating salt altogether, which is not good. Your body runs on salt. It needs salt. It just doesn't need that processed white table salt. It needs sea salt, Himalayan salt, Celtic salt, the way it's made naturally, you know, in the sun. And so you need salt. And I think one of the reasons celery works so well is because it has natural sodium in it, which the body craves and needs. And so celery juice, juicing it in your juicer, people have seen results in like 2 weeks of just drinking the celery juice alone. Of course, weight loss is important, and exercise to really get blood pressure down. And then you got to look at your stress level, I mean, as well. You have to take this holistic approach to it and not just say, okay, I'm going to keep doing everything and just drink celery juice. That will be good to do because you'll be giving your body some great nutrients. But we got to look at the lifestyle as well to see what else needs to change. So, you know, things like celery, garlic, ginger, eating raw garlic in your dishes, juicing ginger also helps with blood pressure. Getting lots of water is extremely important, too, in terms of getting the blood flow well. And, you know, things like yoga every day help with blood pressure, and just meditation helps with that. So all of those things together really, and then if you're, you know, obviously if you have high blood pressure and you're eating a bunch of junk food, you got to stop and start figuring out what to replace the junk food with, too. So it's the white table salt that's the culprit, not salt in and of itself. And a lot of other things cause it, too, not just salt. Salt is just like a symptom. A lot of other things cause high blood pressure other than just having too much salt. So obesity being one of those.
I was just going to ask you about, you said obesity. I didn't want to cut your last part off. Obesity being one of those. So if you are obese, you definitely want to start looking at some things to try to work with that, because that can cause some other complications, and you don't want that. Dr. Lathan, earlier you talked in the show, you mentioned soy. Now, a lot of people that have made the transition and are making the transition from a meat-eating diet to a plant-based diet, you know, go to soy. You know, it's been said that soy is good. Some people tout it even, that it's good for you. You know, it's better than meat. But you mentioned eliminating soy. What's the issue with soy? So those who are listening who might be in the transition stage from eating meat to going vegan or vegetarian or raw, what's wrong with soy?
So all soy is not bad. Soy, certain forms of soy are excellent, and there are studies that show that it helps reduce breast cancer and a lot of other cancers. So We just have to eat the right kind of soy. The type of soy that I don't recommend is the soy protein isolate, the highly processed soy that is no longer a whole food, the soy that is genetically modified. Unless it's organic, there's like an 80% chance that your soy is genetically modified. So we don't want to eat genetically modified foods for a number of reasons. So that's one. Two, when it's the soy protein isolate that they put in so many foods, it's not in its natural form. And when you eat too much of it, the studies have shown eating like more than a cup of that a day, the soy protein isolate can cause problems with the thyroid, which can lead to cancer and other things, abnormalities in our system. So you don't want to eat a lot of processed anything, even processed soy. So soy by itself, eating like fermented forms of soy, like tempeh, miso that you use as a seasoning and in soup, is a good form of soy that you can eat without an issue. It should also be organic. Tofu is not very much processed at all, so you could make tofu at home from soybeans. You couldn't make protein soy isolate in your kitchen without some heavy-duty scientific equipment. So you really want to use the natural soy, organic soy, and in small amounts, and not using it like we would eat beef and things like that. So some soy is good. You want to stick to organic, tempeh, miso, and small amounts of tofu, and leave the rest alone.
So the soy burgers that they might get frozen in the supermarket, is that a yes or a no?
That's going to probably be a no, because it's probably the first ingredient is soy protein isolate. And then when you start looking down the list, there's a bunch of other chemicals they've added to it also that is not good. They do have some burgers that are made from like whole grains, mushrooms, black beans, quinoa. You want to go with those natural burgers and not the soy protein isolate burgers. So they're making a lot better natural ones. And some of them are going to be hit or miss. So know that some you're not going to like, and find the one that you do like and keep trying until you find one. But not all of them taste great, but some do. So you just have to do a little research and hook it up with some barbecue sauce and things like that, and you'll be good to go, you know.
Well, Doctor, I know that there's somebody out there that's probably listening that might be faced with a decision. You know, there may be somebody that went to the doctor and just got a bad report and, you know, been told that they've got colon cancer or breast cancer or lung cancer or any form of cancer, and then been forced or faced with the same decision that you were faced with, you know, a doctor saying, listen, I can schedule you for surgery to have your thyroid removed, or I can schedule you for radiation or chemo, and they don't know what to do. And again, I say to everybody, your spirit brought you here today. How can someone get in contact with you if they just have questions, they just didn't want to ask it on the air, it's too personal, you know, can they reach out to you and, you know, can you, you know, if
sure.
they have questions just concerning if it's just where they can get more information.
Yes, absolutely. I have a contact page on my website at rubylathan.com, and I do answer those. Or you can email me directly at ruby@rubylathan.com, and that's rubylathon.com, and I will respond. I do coach people through this. I work with holistic physicians who I can also refer you to who treat people with cancer naturally. We often work together with clients. And so you definitely want to reach out to someone like myself or someone, a naturopathic person who can guide you through the process, because you need a support system. You don't want to go it alone. So you can definitely make changes on your own, but you need a support system to help get some guidance there to make sure you're not missing anything critical that you could be doing to really get you back into full health.
You know, I would definitely, just picking up on that, recommend the support system, because when you're making that transition, you know, it's not easy, especially if the circles that you have been running in are not holistic circles, you know. So you definitely
right.
need to around other people that are talking the same talk, you know, walking the same walk, and are on the same journey to wellness that you are endeavoring to be on, you know, because, again, if you're around people and, you know, you go out to dinner and you're the only one trying to eat healthy and everybody's sitting in front of you with a steak, you know, or a hamburger or something, that's not conducive to, you know, your healing. You want to surround yourself with other people that are just like you, that are heading in the same direction, and understand the importance of having a holistic lifestyle, because it extends your life. And remember why you're doing it. You know, you're doing it first, of course, for yourself. If you have children, you, of course, want to be here as long as you can for them, as long as, you know, as long as you possibly can. So, again, I have one more question for you, Doc. I don't want to, you know, keep it longer than we have. I don't know how much time you have, but it seems as though children seem to be coming down with cancer. It seems like the numbers seem to be falling, whereas the cancer used to be an old person's disease. It seems like younger people are getting cancer now. Any thoughts on that as to why that could be?
Sure. It is unfortunate that it was, older disease. I mean, not, you know, we don't want it at any age. But it is especially sad when it's even younger and younger. As a matter of fact, for things like diabetes, they used to call type 2 diabetes adult onset diabetes. But because younger and younger people started getting it, they had to rename it to type 2 diabetes because kids and teenagers were getting it. And so that, to me, it's like, let's not change the name. Let's change the disease. You know, and that's not what happened. We just changed the name and just keep on moving. It's just more people to make money off of. So with cancer, I mean, there are a number of things. Obviously, you know, the radiation and cell phone use is like at a record high. You know, when I was growing up, we didn't have nearly as much radioactive waves that are flying around in the wireless internet, and I didn't have a cell phone and all those things as a kid, and now we're giving our kids, you know, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but you have to think about this when you're giving your kids electronic devices at very young ages, you know, from our iPads to our cell phones, that radiation has been shown to cause cancer. So you can't kind of just ignore those facts that the research is out. You know, the technology companies just are not. They're just sitting on it for as long as they can before the lid is blown off, just like all these other industries like smoking, tobacco, and everything. Now everybody knows it's bad for you. It's like everybody knows cell phones are bad for you, for example, but no one is really doing anything about it. They're saying, yeah, but really shouldn't be putting cell phones to our ears. We shouldn't be wearing them on our belts because that's a constant form of radiation that's coming to you. And there are some other things you can do to make your phone less radio to make the frequencies less, little discs that you can do that dissipate some of that radiation that you can put on your phones and things like that. So I definitely think the growth of our wireless devices is a factor. And not only that, I think it's also that we feed kids junk and we think it's okay. Mm-hmm. If you ever looked at any kid's menu at any restaurant, you're going to find cheese and meat. That's pretty much all that's going to be on there. It's going to be chicken fingers, macaroni and cheese, pizza. Every kid's menu in every state in this country has those on there. And that is poor food. That is crap. It's not really food. And we think it's okay because they're not obese yet that we can feed kids, you know, potato chips and macaroni and cheese and french fries and chicken fingers and french fries for dinner and think that's okay. I don't understand why people think that's okay. If it's not okay for you, why would it be okay for a 6, 7, 8-year-old? Just because they're not fat yet? It's just like the thought process is a big disconnect in what we think of food for kids. And so we're giving them Jell-O pudding. We're giving them fruit roll-ups. We're giving them garbage and expecting them to be their best. Which is why explosion of cancer is not just cancer. There's explosion of all these other childhood diseases as well, from ADHD to diabetes and all these things are growing in together. And it's because of the poor food, the food colorings. All the children's food is full of sugar and food coloring. So if it's not meat and cheese we're giving them sugar and food color. So, I mean, so kids are growing. And so I think that the poor diet are directly related to the explosion of cancer, childhood cancers that we're seeing right now, especially when you look at public schools in terms of the food that they're feeding. We give our kids the cheapest food possible at the, you know, the free lunches, and whether you pay for it or not, they use the cheapest ingredients from the, you know, manufacturers that couldn't sell it to a good restaurant, but they can sell it off to the school that's trying to pay no more than a dollar per meal for kids to eat. So when you think about what's going on with the food industry, especially marketing food to kids, it's no wonder that that we have an explosion of illnesses. To me, I'm just shocked that it's not higher than it is when we look at the poor food that we give our kids.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, Dr. Latham, are you good? You got a couple more minutes?
I have a couple more minutes, sure, sure.
Okay, good, good. Everybody, I'm giving you a chance. If you got a question, you better press one. I can bring you on board. Doctor, what role does the glycemic index play in this whole discussion? Again, we're talking about colon cancer, but not just colon cancer because, again, like Dr. Latham is fond of saying again, if you heal the body, you heal the body, okay? So if you were to heal yourself of colon cancer, if you had diabetes, you can rest assured that that'd be gone too. If you had arthritis, chances are that would be gone too. So, you know, again, if you have a question that's not specifically on colon cancer, please don't be shy. Just ask your question. But what role does the glycemic index play in this whole discussion?
Well, so the glycemic index is really about the amount of sugar in food. And how much it affects our body in terms of when we eat it. So certain types of sugar will spike our sugar levels more than others. If the food has a very high glycemic index, it's going to spike that, especially eaten alone, versus food that have a low glycemic index. So if, for example, bananas are going to be sweeter than blueberries on the glycemic index scale. Dates are going to be, you know, sweet as well. But when you eat things that have fiber and protein, it slows down the absorption of the sugar in your body. So eating things that have white processed sugar and flour, that's going to raise your glycemic index because they've been stripped of their natural fibers and now you're getting just almost just pure sugar going into your system. And the problem with, you really want an even keel of your sugar levels. You don't like this. We don't like spikes because your body then releases insulin to deal with that. And a lot of times too much insulin to deal with these spikes. And then you start causing an imbalance in your system. And over time, all this flooding of sugar and excess insulin causes insulin resistance, and then your body's not able to process the sugar the way that it should, and then you end up with diabetes. And so you really want to, so it's not just sugar that causes diabetes like a lot of people think. It's fatty foods that also impedes the process of metabolizing sugars and fats as well. So, and then the starchy foods, you know, chips and flour and all the, you know, crackers and all this stuff, pretzels, and that we think are okay, eating those, especially by themselves, causes that spike. And then what also happens is the spike usually causes a crash, which makes you sleepy and feel lethargic, and then you end up wanting more sugar because you want an energy boost, and then you take some more sugar, you get high on the sugar again, and then the crash. And so this goes over and over and over, which is not what your body needs. It wants kind of more of a straight little wavy line, not a big, you know, peaks and valleys. And so that causes a big problem. So eating, you know, refined food causes that problem. Eating super fatty, meaty products causes that problem. And so over time, it just leads to disruption in the way your body is able to handle metabolizing food and fats and sugar.
So you really want to eat.
I'm listening.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, please, continue.
Okay, so I just want to say, you want to eat foods in their whole form because they already come almost in a perfect form. For example, a date is very sweet, but a date has minerals, nutrients, and fiber. So my body's able to handle that. So instead of putting sugar or something like that in your smoothie or processed juice, you put a couple of dates in there, and it's this whole form. Your body knows what to do with it. It's made up properly, and so it's not going to spike your blood sugar the way that eating, you know, a tablespoon of processed honey or something would, you know. So it's about the whole foods once again.
This information is so powerful. It's so very much important, so much needed. I wish they need to teach nutrition in school. They really do. They really need to teach this to children. They need to teach it to them. And I think that had they had a class like this, what you're sharing, this information, it should be a prerequisite before you graduate junior high school. You should know about nutrition. You should know about exercise. You should know about the glycemic index. You should know about alkalinity versus acidity. You know, and maybe we can just touch on that real quick. Give me 5 more minutes. Sound like a preacher. Can I get 5 more minutes? What about alkalinity versus acidity? Alkalinity versus acidity. What is alkaline? If you could talk about the range, you know, when they talk about what is alkaline, what is acidic, and why that's important.
Right. So, there's something, our body really stays at a range. So the range is like 0 to 14 in terms of the pH scale. And every food product has a number on that scale somewhere. Your body likes to stay around 7.3 or 4 it is, to stay slightly more alkaline. It cannot get too acidic or you'll end up dead at some point. So your body will go through great effort to keep you alkaline. You can either help that process or hinder that process. So, and we can take a wild guess at foods that are acidic because, you know, when you eat acidic foods, your body has to process that and deal with it and then try to get your body back in its alkaline state. And so foods that are highly acidic are processed foods, flour, sugar, sodas, meat, dairy, cheese products, all on the acidic side, coffee, all of that's very acidic. Things that are less acidic are going to be beans, nuts, seeds, and some grains, but they're on the less acidic side. So there's like a spectrum that, you know, that's going to be, if you draw it out, you'll see things that are very, very acidic and things that are not that acidic. And then things that are alkaline are all fruits and vegetables. Surprise, surprise. Almost all of them are alkaline, especially the leafy ones, the citrus, even citrus fruits. In the body, they're all alkaline. So while we might think that from a chemistry perspective, you know, milk is a base or alkaline, it really isn't in the body. It causes an acidic response. So you have to eat a balance of these foods. So it's not about eating 100% alkaline. It's about eating predominantly alkaline food. So the majority of your plate needs to be things that are alkaline. 50, 60, 70% of your plate, you want more alkaline foods. And then you're eating smaller amounts of the whole grains and nuts and seeds. So that, you know, looking at that chart, just in and of itself, you could see that, okay, majority of my plate, at least 50% of my plate needs to be something green, something alkaline, whether it's, you know, breakfast, bunch of fruit and things like that. Because what the body does is over time, in addition to, it's harder for disease to grow in an alkaline state, so in your body. So if your body is more alkaline, studies have shown that it's harder for disease to grow. When your body is more acidic, it's easier for disease to grow. So what the body does to try to keep it more alkaline is it will take, if you're not eating a balance, it's going to take calcium from your blood to keep you in a alkaline state. If there's not enough calcium in the blood, it starts to take it from the bones to keep in an alkaline state. So if you're repeatedly giving yourself very acidic, like coffee, eggs, and bacon and grits for breakfast, let's say you do that, or coffee and donuts for breakfast, that is extremely acidic. Coffee, eggs, and bacon, extremely acidic. Egg McMuffin and coffee, very acidic. Starbucks bagel and latte, very acidic. So now you've started out with a very acidic day, and your body has to go through and try to normalize that. So it's going to start taking the calcium from your blood, and then you keep doing that, it takes it from the bone if there's not enough there. And so because basically it's trying to keep you alive, and over time you start getting brittle bones because the calcium is being leached from your bones to keep you from being too acidic, and then you get more brittle bones and osteoporosis and things like that, in addition to a lot of other ailments, because your body's in a constantly acidic state, which harbors, which is like the perfect environment for disease. So it's really important to be alkaline, to eat alkaline foods, drink alkaline, you know, not just water, but juices, coconut water, aloe vera juice, things like that. And you want fresh juice that you juice yourself. You know, it's not, you know, orange juice in the bottle is not good. It's mostly sugar at this point because all the enzymes have been killed off, and a lot of times things are added to it, and it's too sweet. We really want to be drinking water. It's the best juice, the best liquid, the best beverage for you. Coconut water is great, too, especially if it's fresh. Some of the teas like green tea and things like that are excellent. The herbal teas are great. Kombucha is great. But you really shouldn't be drinking, definitely no sodas and Gatorades and things like that. All the sports drinks are no, absolutely not. And you don't want to be drinking lots of juice and orange juice and cranberry juice and all these things that usually have added sugar but have been processed pretty heavily. So, you know, alkalinity is one of the keys of reducing inflammation in the body and reducing disease. So that's why it's so important to eat green pretty much at every meal, to eat fruits or vegetables as the main thing at every meal and not as a side garnish.
You know, Dr. Layton, when we have you back, we're going to have to, you know, get into the grains, nuts, and seeds, because a lot of times people, when they hear that, you know, they hear words and then they visualize it. Okay, I heard seed. They visualize a seed. They heard nuts. Okay, I visualize a nut and I heard grain. Grain, they think of a field.
Right.
A field,
right.
And on a farm with wheat growing and blowing in the wind, you know.
Right,
so
right.
We'll
I know. It's like we've got to start we need a new lexicon for healthy food, and I might have to start that movement because it doesn't sound right, you know. But
everybody, just awesome,
yeah, I mean,
awesome,
I did
awesome,
class
awesome.
Today where we did nuts and seeds. We did an almond garlic pesto, and it was made with almonds, garlic, lemon, cilantro, all things that are very good for you. It tasted great. But that's nuts and seeds, you know what I mean? It just doesn't. So you have to be a little more imaginative. Check out my website, and you'll see the kind of foods we're talking about. We're not talking about just eating boring nuts and seeds and some, you know, wheat that you rub between your hands and eat. You know, we're talking about real food that tastes really good.
Dr. Layton, can you please give a number again for those who might be listening? Again, I encourage you to call Dr. Layton, check out her website, check out the show, The Veggie Chest. Living healthy and eating right, it's not boring, really. It's a very exciting life. I mean, it's
right.
Beats going back and forth to the show, that's for sure, you know. And for those who are listening that have made that transition, I applaud you. I applaud you. I applaud you. Congratulations. Keep up the good work. Keep it up. There's always more you can learn. So check out The Veggie Chest. Check out Dr. Layton's website. And, Dr., could you please give the you said they can get
sure.
the telephone number off of the website.
Yeah, well, the number is 202-709-7829. You can reach me there, or you can reach me through my website at ruby, ruby@ruby.com or email ruby@ruby.com. Mm-hmm.
Doctor, thank you so much for your time. I know we went over a little bit, but, you know, again, I appreciate mm-hmm. you taking the time out to be my guest this afternoon, this evening. Those of you who are on board listening, thank you so much because, again, as I said, your spirit brought you here. It's no accident. If it's not for you, it's for somebody that you know. I encourage you to share this broadcast with your friends if you know they didn't listen. We have an archives. All you have to do is just give them the link, and they can go back to the archives, and the archives will be available immediately following this show. I'd like to give a shout-out to Queen Carmen at Healthy247 and everybody in that group who's tuned in to listen. I appreciate you. I love you. And Dr. Lathan, again, for all of the work that you do, may God continue to open doors for you. You know, you are changing the planet one person at a time, one recipe at a time. I thank you so much. Any parting words?
Thank you. Well, I always enjoy talking with you, and just encourage people, you know, who are listening, that, you know, listening is the first step of getting good information, and then the next step is making a plan to apply it. So if you've listened tonight, you know, take the next step, either go to the website or connect with people in meetup groups or something to keep this process going so you can make the changes that you need to live a healthy and happy life.
Doctor, you've had the final word. Again, thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon. And by the way, Dr. Lathan is a regular Wands for Life. She comes on once a month, and she'll be back. And I'll get the information out there to you to let you know exactly when she'll be back on. And tell your friends, spread the word. Doctor, health and peace to you, my friend.
Thank you. All right. Well, good night.
Okay, good night, everybody. That was Dr. Ruby Lathan. And just by virtue of the fact that you tuned in, you obviously want to go higher. I again encourage you to check out her website, check out the Veggie Chest, and give her a call because, again, this is life-changing, life-saving information. And, again, you didn't hear this by accident. So if you're ready to go higher, I'm ready to take you, okay? Now, again, the name of the show is Jawanza for Life. Heard every Tuesday and Thursday. So from 7 to 8 p.m., you know where to expect me. So I expect for you to be here too. So let's go higher. Peace and blessings. I love you too.
Take me up higher. Reach for the top. Higher and higher.